Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Probe 7 calling base. This is Probe 7 calling base. This is Probe 7. Probe 7 with a landing report. Over to you, base. Over to you.
Probe 7, this is base. Probe 7, this is base. You're coming through low but audibly. Go ahead, Probe 7.
I've crash-landed into a planet system 4.3 light-years, my son. Most of my equipment's gone. As of the moment, I don't know this planet's density or its atmospheric composition. But I'm alive and breathing.
Your visual image is very indistinct. Can you increase your power?
I've got half a generator and 3 solar cells left. Just how I'm getting through to you, I can't even explain.
Can you effect repairs? If so, how long do you estimate it will take?
I'll give it about 20 years. New right arm, maybe replace my head, I can make a start. In short, I need help. I need help desperately, and I need it right away.
I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space. On such a timeless flight.
Calling base. Probe 7, calling base. Over to you, base.
We read you very well, Colonel. Tell us your situation, please.
Relatively unchanged, General. I worked on the solar cells, so I'll be sending out more power. It'll be temporary, but you're coming in much stronger now, too.
What about your ship?
Probe 7 is no longer probing, General, unless it's the few subterranean feet where I landed. I've been outside this plant life, and I was pretty sure of that when I spiraled in. The gravity pull's about the same as ours, and what I can tell of the atmosphere, that's roughly similar as well.
We've got a major problem here, Cook. There's been a major crisis. War is imminent. The next 24 hours will probably tell.
There's always a major crisis, and there's always talk of war. You'll forgive me, General, but my own problem has a little more immediacy for me. It's a little more personalized. I've got a week's food left and 2 broken bones in 1 arm. Can't another ship be sent out for me?
There isn't another ship, Cook, unless we build one. If we have war in the next few hours, there isn't going to be anybody left around to do any building. That's the realistic view, Colonel. That may go down hard, but those are the facts of life.
Probe 7, this is base. This is our last contact, Cook. Just a few minutes ago, we got ours. 500% increase in the radioactivity around us. From what we can gather, the enemy had it just as bad as we did. We wiped them out, they wiped us out. Just one last forlorn wish for you, son. Whoever you meet there,
however you meet them. I hope it can come without fear. I hope it can come without anger. I hope your new world will be different. I hope you'll find no words such as hate. I hope there'll be...
Well, we're dispossessed. Now we're going to possess. This is our home now. This is Earth.
Sepla.
Is that your food? Is that what you've been living on? What is it?
Eat food.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible. Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
Whoa, that was a hard ride. Man, going through these wormholes is something else. Well, let's see. I am here at Marblehead, Ohio, on vacation to a parallel world. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make Saturday's show, but everybody will do well without me. But wait, I think I hear some talking going on. It sounds like Lynn.
We are missing two of our very, very wonderful and loyal host tonight. Robert will not be here. He's on a very much needed vacation. I hope he's enjoying it. And Dave is not here. He had some family event to attend, and that's okay. And, you know, some things come before Twilight Zone. I don't know how they come before the Twilight Zone, but some things come before the Twilight Zone. So we will forgive them for that, and they will be here in 2 weeks, and they will... I believe Robert said he's going to insert their reviews when he gets back from vacation. So if you want to listen to their reviews, you can listen later on in our archives. It will be there. But anyway, oh, well, just so we have something. Okay. So we have our little... Twilight Zone thing. All right. And today, I want to welcome our loyal listener, Rick Wall. Hey, Rick.
Hello, hey, hey. Hello.
And Louie. Hello, hello.
Hello.
And, of course, Bobby's here.
Oh, hi. You know, I'm on vacation, too, but I'm so dedicated to this show that I came in off the beach to stand in the hotel lobby just to do this show, so... I deserve a little credit for that.
I give you a lot of credit for that, yes. Okay. And so it's wonderful to have you here, and thanks for taking time out from your beach fun and frolics there to be here with us. And today's episode is called Probe 7 Over and Out.
And now, Mr. Serling.
One Colonel Cook, a traveler in space. He's landed on a remote planet several million miles from his point of departure. He can make an inventory of his plight by just one 360-degree movement of head and eyes. Colonel Cook has been set adrift in an ocean of space in a metal lifeboat that has been scorched and destroyed and will never fly again. He survived the crash, but his ordeal is yet to begin. Now he must give battle to loneliness. Now Colonel Cook must meet the unknown. It's a small planet set deep in space, but for Colonel Cook, it's the Twilight Zone.
Let's see. My timer says that I got minutes, so hopefully it'll be enough time to listen to the show before I go to the next parallel world. Wait and see.
The whole gist of it is astronaut Adam Cook crash lands on a strange planet with gravity and atmosphere conditions similar to those on his home world. And most of his equipment is put out of commission by the crash. And he can't repair it because his arm's broken and he has a lack of resources. So shortly afterwards, he learns that his home world has embarked on a catastrophic nuclear war. Eventually, he finds a woman from, I guess she's of another species, who tells him her name is Noda, and they can't understand each other's language, but she communicates with him through sketches drawn in the sand and using symbolism and pantomime, and, you know, they tell each other that they're stranded, and her planet has left her basically, you know, in orbit, and she's somehow survived. So in his last transmission to his home world, his superior back home, who's named General Larrabee, tells him there may be no survivors when the war is over. And so he can expect no rescue. And he tells him that he hopes his new world is more peaceful than the one he left. And then after that, Cook decides, well, he's going to explore the planet he's on. And he's joined by Norda. And together, they embark for more fertile areas, which Cook describes as looking like a garden. So he fully introduces himself as Adam Cook, and Norda gives her full name as Norda Eve, and Adam and Eve begin a new life on this planet called Earth. I guess Norda pronounces it a little differently. She says Earth, and he says Earth. And at this point, she even offers him a sipla, which appears to be very familiar to the forbidden fruit, the apple, of Adam and Eve. And as they venture further, Rod Serling narrates that even he presumes that the place they are heading to is Eden. So, I don't know, poor Adam Cook, you know, he crashes his rocket on an unknown planet. And to make matters worse, he can't contact General Larrabee. But when he does, he tells him, oh, there's a devastating war and all life's going to be destroyed on this planet. It's funny because they never really mention Earth. But, you know, you kind of assume that it's Earth. And so there's no chance of rescue. And to make matters worse, his arm's broken. He can't repair the ship. You know, rotten luck. Really rotten luck. It's like one thing after another going wrong for the poor guy. But he's not going to let this bad turn of events get the best of him. You know, so he's stuck on a planet with no chance of rescue and broken arm and everything. But hey, you know, let's go out and explore. So he does that. And he meets up with the stranded Norda. She doesn't know where she is. She doesn't speak his language. He's determined to communicate with her. She's only hope for companionship. And things don't go well at first, you know, because he's starting to communicate. And then he picks up a stick and she scratches the hell out of his face, you know. She's scared to death, but, you know, then she runs off. So, you know, you figure his name's Adam, her name's Eve, real cute, you know. But let me think a second. Where have I seen this story before? Oh, yeah. We saw almost the same story done in season 3's 2 with Charles Bronson and Elizabeth Montgomery, which was a much better episode. I mean, this was so much of a copy and not a very good one that it was almost laughable. I mean, come on, she even offers him an apple. I mean, at least 2 didn't go so far as to infer that Bronson and Montgomery were Adam and Eve. But the story was so copied. And remember when Elizabeth Montgomery's character shot at Bronson's character, she then regrets doing that. And then she shows up the next day in the dress that he gave her, looking totally remorseful. You know, she looks up at him and he's standing there and she's got this terribly sorry look on her face and they patch things up. Well, Norda scratches Cook's face, then shows up the next day looking up at the space at the rocket, same remorseful look on her face, and they patch things up. I mean, the totally obvious attempt at copying two was almost shameful. I really believe that. Maybe when these episodes first aired, the writers, the producers, directors thought, well, no one's going to notice this two seasons later. But they didn't count on years and years of reruns and DVDs and marathons to come, which would make it all the more obvious. Yet, with all of my griping here, and I am griping, but I didn't think it was a terrible episode. It's definitely watchable, not groan-inducing. It's not that bad. The visuals weren't bad. And, after doing a bit of research, I found out that crashed ship had been built for an Outer Limits episode called Specimen Unknown. But, other than that, it was okay. Yeah, Richard Basehart, Antoinette Bauer, they were decent in the roles. Charles Bronson, Elizabeth Montgomery, they were better. But it wasn't terrible. It was decent acting. I'm going to give it a two. I'm being generous, but I'm giving it a two, even though it was a blatant copy and shamefully so.
Well, things seem to be quieting down. While there's still a break going on here, I'm going to get ahead and give you my review for Probe 7 Over and Out. When watching this story, seemed very familiar to me. As I watched these scenes unfold, then it came to me that this was a retelling of a story from Season 3 called 2. In 2, we get the results of an apocalyptic war. In Probe 7, we have an astronaut and a crashed spaceship. Meanwhile, back on Earth, an apocalyptic war is beginning. The comparisons to 2 is uncanny in how similar these stories are. It's like Rod took Montgomery Pittman's script and reworked it for this story. It's 2, but in space. But here is the problem. It's not so much of a retelling of the Adam and Eve story, which is the same thing we got in 2, but it's the chemistry between the two actors that just didn't work. Richard Basehart seems to do a grumpy acting job like he did in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Antonia Bauer just did not have the connection Elizabeth Montgomery had with Charles Bronson. It's also reminded of a story from Logan's Run, the series called Man Out of Time. And in that story, a scientist tries to change the past to prevent the nuclear holocaust that happens on Earth. But when he goes back to see if anything's been changed and find out what the cause was, he finds out that he may have caused it by inventing the very time machine he built to try to change the future and in so changing the past. Like Probe 7 may have caused the apocalyptic war back on Earth. The retread of the story, unfortunately, is not as good as the original. And I give a 2.5 out of 5 rating for the story.
So I'm going to turn it over to Bobby.
Oh, how lucky can you get to be able to go second for such a superior story? Yeah, okay. Much to my dismay, I had to watch this again yesterday for the second time this year because we recently reviewed it at the group. And one thing that comes to mind the minute it starts is how far-fetched it is, to put it mildly. So since that's the second time this year that I felt that way, I thought just for the hell of it, after watching it yesterday, I went online to an online dictionary site to find the definition of far-fetched. And I found these words to describe something that's far-fetched: improbable, unlikely, implausible, unconvincing, dubious, doubtful, incredible, unbelievable, and unthinkable. If ever a story fit this description, these descriptions, this is the one. I know this is the Twilight Zone and anything is possible, but really, at some point, even science fiction turns into a fairy tale. And that's what we have here. One great thing I would imagine about being a writer is having the opportunity to stack the deck in any way you want in order to advance your story. And Rod Serling does that here to an extraordinary extreme. How convenient can it get? An astronaut crash lands on a planet light years away. And what do you know? It has oxygen, gravity, food, water, and a hot girlfriend for him. Timing is everything, and it could not be better. To top that, nuclear war breaks out of nowhere while he is there, and the entire world is destroyed, leaving him all alone to play with her. And if you're going to do any of this, this is the best time to do it. But the funny part about this is that I seem to remember when we landed on the moon, and Neil Armstrong took that one small step for man and one giant leap for mankind. He didn't turn around and find fruit trees in bloom. In fact, the moon was barren, and all we got out of it was some rocks. There's not much there for us, so we haven't gone back in decades because it's not worth the money it costs to go there. Thankfully, we didn't have a war while he and Buzz Aldrin were there, or mankind would have been out of luck. This was inevitable, of course. For most of Season 5, Serling has plagiarized himself repeatedly, as Lynn has already pointed out, bringing back old, tired stories masquerading as new ones as if we have no memory. But even that runs out after a while, so now he's plagiarizing the Bible. He's really getting desperate. Not only, as she mentioned, is it a virtual carbon copy of that story, but also of the episode 2, as Lynn just mentioned. But towards the end of it, it also reminded me of Season 1's episode, The Lonely. At the end of this story, it's pointed out how alone he will be now since he's the only one left. And, of course, in The Lonely, that man was given a woman to stay with him, but she turned out to be a robot. Here, not only is she the lovely flesh and blood Antoinette Bauer, but remarkably, she learns to speak English almost immediately. All he has to do is say a word, and she repeats it right away. Just in case we are in some sort of stupor and don't understand where this is headed, Rod gives them the names Adam and Eve, and they even find an apple. Oh, now I get it. Now I understand. At our group site, I sometimes am just too generous and actually gave this a 1 rating, pretty much for Richard Basehart, who I always liked. He had a great voice and way of speaking that is very effective here, but this episode doesn't deserve an actor of his status. He left us decades ago, very young. I think he was only about 60 years old, but Antoinette Bauer is still around. She will turn 82 in September. She is an alien. She is from Germany originally, and she lives there right now. Now, all I can say is that Mother Goose could not have written this better. If my mother had read this to me when I was a little boy at bedtime, I would have fallen asleep immediately. In fact, I almost did nod off yesterday while watching it. It's a preposterous story, and it's just too silly to take it seriously. It just is. And to say nothing of the fact that he's got a broken arm. Really, I forgot about that. He's got a broken arm. And what did they intend to do about that? Back in the 70s, I fell down and broke my ankle, and it hurt like hell. And I was in a cast for like 6 weeks. So he's just going to walk around with that broken arm, and it's going to heal itself, huh? Yeah, I'll bet it was, because that always works. So it's just ridiculous, and it's just continuously sad to see such a brilliant writer completely lose his mind and just do these absurd stories. This one is just, you know, he stole from everybody, stole from himself, stole from the Bible, stole from everywhere. I kind of get the feeling that when he was writing the story, he realized it was getting more and more ridiculous, so he decided to call them Adam and Eve, too. If you're going to go that far, you might as well go the rest of the way. So, like I said, I gave it a 1 because I kind of like Richard Basehart, but boy, oh boy, you know. She had a very good acting career, too, but I wouldn't brag about this on my resume. No, she's retired. She retired and moved back to Germany. But I personally would not be that proud of that, the story that happened on my resume. So there you go. It's just another week and another story as the series continues to just slowly fade away. Lynn?
And I wonder, I think, if correctly, I think Dave A.C. may be traveling to repair World 2. I think he has a timer like I do.
Hi all, hope you're having a good show today. Sorry I can't be with you. Apologies, Lynn and everyone. But let me give a brief review of Series 5, Episode 1, 2, 9, Probe 9, Over and Out. First aired November 29th, 1963. Well, I actually really got interested in this because I'd forgotten the actual storyline from watching it a long time ago. And I actually like the idea. The old crash landing one, of course, it's been used before. It's been a topic of a few of these Twilight Zone episodes. The one with the two flying saucers in it. The one with Roddy McDowall in it as a crashed astronaut. It has been used before. But that pales into insignificance in the fact that, really, this story has been told before. And I think it was Series 3, Episode 66, called Two, the one with Charles Bronson, Elizabeth Montgomery. In fact, in some ways, this was a little bit better because they left out the jellied chicken. But other than that, basically, with the heavy-handed hints of I've got a broken rib, I'm going to move over there because it's more like a garden, and she offers him some fruit that looks suspiciously like an apple. Richard Basehart, very well indeed in the main part, and the lady Antoinette Bauer playing, who we of course find out are one called Adam, one called Eve, and the planet that he'd come from was not Earth as we always assume at the beginning. And so basically what started out looking as though it was going to be a great story of survival didn't. In fact, I had a slight Forbidden Planet thing at the beginning, because when we were seeing those trees and bushes rustle, I was thinking, oh, they're invisible. What, the creatures on this planet are invisible. But of course, that was just to build up the suspense and the reveal. In fact, the one thing that he wanted to meet was a young woman. And if Robert hasn't already thought of it, it may well be a reminder to some people of a particular episode of Enterprise where the captain is on a hunting planet, and a woman appears towards him, and he's not sure whether it's actually a real woman or whatever, and it turns out to be one of the creatures that they are being hunted down on this sport planet. It started off extremely well. It's the sort of Twilight Zone I look forward to. Then it quickly came into sort of a derivative. Now, I said before that I don't judge it on things that have happened since, because the story's been a well-trodden path since then. But this is already a well-trodden path in the Twilight Zone series in its own right. In particular, of course, the episode called Two. So I was originally thinking, well, this might be a 3 out of 5, but I think I've got to drop that down to 2, maybe even 1.5, because really it's just a second bite of the apple. Oh no, second bite of the cherry. Well, you get my meaning. So back to you guys. Hope the show goes very well today, and I'll be with you next time.
There's still a couple more good ones coming up though. Then and I want to welcome Felix. Hi Felix, I'm glad you made it. Felix is here, and I'm going to turn it over to Rick.
All right. First of all, I've said this many times. There is no such thing as originality. Everything has been done already in something, as you said, the Bible, and some writer by the name of William Shaky something or other. Anywho.
Oh, Billy Shakes. Yeah, Billy Shakes.
Yeah. Anywho, yeah, it's cliched. Yeah, there are plot holes you can drive a truck through.
Mm-hmm.
But if it had a worse actor than Basehart, it would really be crappy.
Yeah.
And he pulled off a miracle,
he managed
in my opinion.
To save it. Yeah, he managed to save it somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. But, and I didn't know that it was a set from Outer Limits, or the ship was from
the
Outer Limits.
Yeah, the rock.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's about it. And she did do a good job, I thought, too. So, yeah, I'd give it a 2.5.
Okay, that's all right. And Felix said that Stephen King said this episode wouldn't have been accepted by any sci-fi magazine. It was so bad. Oh, there you go. Stephen King. I didn't really realize he even watched it. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm sure Stephen King watched all of Twilight Zone. Yeah. Okay.
He wrote the.
Oh, that's right, in the movie. Yeah. The movie. Yep, that's right. That's right. I'm sure he saw the whole series. And well, okay, so if Stephen King didn't like it, then but I do think and Felix says he despises this episode. He gives a minus one. Well, yeah, I think Richard Basehart did save it somewhat. I mean, I can't see. It's hard to imagine another actor who could have really done much better with it. I mean, Burgess Murray is now. I don't think Burgess Murray.
No. I'll tell you who when I give you my review.
All right. Well, it's your turn, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, thanks, Lynn. All right. Well, this episode, it seems like a paint-by-the-numbers kind of story. I mean, I saw the end. You know, I kind of predicted the ending, too. And, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Twilight Zone regularly. I mean, I started up now with this podcast. But I don't know if I just knew the ending because I remembered this episode or it seemed obvious where it was heading. It really feels weak. You know, I went back and saw two to see what you guys were talking about because I read your reviews online. And you're right, that's a much better episode. I mean, I want to say better actors, but I don't know, the chemistry between Montgomery and Bronson, I think, was a little better. I mean, there was, Richard Basehart was good. What I'd like to say is, so when I first started watching this episode, I was a little annoyed at the repartee or the discussion between Cook and the general on the other planet because it is so dry. This is a man who is stranded, and yet all he can say, he's just complaining. You've got to send a ship out here. And the other guy's like, oh, we can't do it. And they're talking like this Walter Cronkite voice the whole time. It's just, it's like, you know, that's the way it is. September 5th. Yeah. You know, it's a strange dialogue that they have. And I kept thinking, people really don't talk like this. You know, Richard Basehart's facing the fact that he's probably going to be stranded forever alone on a planet. And yet, you know, I mean, you know, at this point, I think what Rod Serling is trying to do is just espouse his own philosophy, maybe, about how he sees life. Because there's a point where Richard Basehart starts talking about, it's when what's-her-name scratches his face, and he goes into this kind of semi-rant about how man is and how we're doomed to be who we are. And at that point, I was thinking, this sounds like Charlton Heston at the beginning of Planet of the Apes.
And that completes my final report until we reach touchdown. We're now on full automatic in the hands of the computers. I've tucked my crew in for the long sleep, and I'll be joining them soon. In less than an hour, we'll finish our 6th month out of Cape Kennedy. 6 months in deep space. By our time, that is. According to Dr. Heslein's theory of time in a vehicle traveling nearly the speed of light, the Earth has aged nearly 700 years since we left it. Well, we've aged hardly at all. Maybe so. This much is probably true. The men who sent us on this journey are long since dead and gone. You who are reading me now are a different breed. I hope a better one. I leave the 20th century with no regrets. But one more thing. If anybody's listening, that is. Nothing scientific. It's purely personal. But seen from out here, everything seems different. Time bends. Space is boundless. It squashes a man's ego. I feel lonely. That's about it. Tell me, though. Does man, that marvel of the universe, that glorious paradox who sent me to the stars, still make war against his brother? Keep his neighbor's children starving?
And that's another movie that, not thinking, well, Charlton Heston could have done it, because it's that same kind of dialogue and that same kind of flat delivery, kind of like a pointing a finger at the audience. Man is no good. And, you know, so at this point, that entire first half of that episode just feels like it's just a big, we suck as humanity. We fight, we kill, we kill them, they kill us. And I, at this point, I just think, Robert, and the thing is, Rod Serling has been, he did this before. He did that with the other episode recently that we watched.
I have a friend who worked for NASA.
Uh-huh.
He was fired for making a joke. Yes, people do talk like that, especially in NASA and to the astronauts.
I understand that. I mean, I'm not even so much against it, but this is like a serious situation. This guy's about to lose his life on the planet. Richard Basehart's on the planet about to be ruined, and yet there's no, like, it's just, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's just
how
it is.
Yeah, I know. What you're saying, there's no tension or anything.
Yeah, there's no,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No emotion, and it's just kind of weird. And, you know, and then even he gives that little last message, I hope you don't find hate, but you find love where you are. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, I'm not against it.
He was almost talking to him as if his car was stranded in the road somewhere.
Yeah. But the thing is that whole opening segment is very dogmatic. It's just, it's, I think it's Serling just kind of like making his point. And I remember when he made that speech, I was thinking of Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes, because he goes there and he's got this kind of arrogant view of life and how bad man is. And, well, we're not there anymore. So, you know, I mean, it's just.
Yeah, but Charlton Heston could get away with it.
No, but I think Richard Basehart did the same kind of thing with the same kind of dialogue that Serling gave him. That's why I'm saying I thought maybe Richard, I mean, I think Tom Heston could have done this if he had decided to do it.
Yeah, Charlton Heston. Well, Charlton Heston done it, it would have been a five.
But, yeah.
I've always been in love with Charlton Heston, so I think Charlton Heston does, is a five for me.
But this episode, yeah, it just, you know, I mean, you know, I realize.
Hey, you know who should have done it? Roddy McDowell.
Too whiny.
Well, with the dialogue that was presented, you had to have some of the. I mean, in some ways, these, you know, they're all acting like they're enlightened people that they know. And, you know, and it's also, I feel a little funny about the episode where it's, the women are all so kind of like. Like you said, like meek, and it's up to the men. Ah, you're back. I guess you want to come with me. Sure. Come. You know? It seemed funny to me. It's kind of like, you know, I'm, you know, of course, I'm the man. You must come with me. That's how it felt like.
Ah, you've come back. You've come back. I knew you would.
Yes. It just comes off so just, I don't know.
Hey, how about Claude Aiken?
He might have been okay. I could see that a little bit.
You
had to get a paternal actor, like maybe Lauren Green or somebody. Someone who's like, you know, he can take charge now. He can start a new civilization on this planet.
That's why I think Claude Akins could have done that, yeah.
Oh, he could have done it. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But, the rest of the episode. The rest of the episode kind of falls flat. I mean, You know, it was no surprise when I was waiting for the big reveal because I realized, oh, they didn't mention that it was Earth. This is apparently Adam and Eve. And then they go forward and actually tell us that my name is Adam. What's your name? Of course, you know, she's going to say Eve. And now, you know, and like, he's like the guy. What do you call this? Earth. We shall call this place Earth. You know, it's like, he's just
Yeah, it was like really floopy, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. This is a fertile land, and we will thrive. We will rule over all this land, and we will call it this land.
I think we should call it your grave. Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Ah, ah, ah. Mine is an evil laugh. Now die! Ah, oh, no God! Ah, oh, dear God in heaven!
Oh, motherless son of a...
But you know what? I mean, just for the fact that as an episode on the whole, I'd give it a one star, but the kind of evoking of Charlton Heston from Planet of the Apes and that whole... I don't mind the philosophy that Serling was trying to, I guess, push forward to us, except it just feels like it was, like, delivered that way. It wasn't in the story. It was just him preaching to us, and that didn't work so well from, like, a... storytelling kind of point of view or kind of a character view is just, you know, all right, so yeah, because I guess nuclear war was really on the minds of everyone there, and are we really going to blow each other up? Is that really a smart thing to do? And, well, you know, Batman is stupid, so maybe they will do it. So, and I keep thinking that's what Serling kept trying to push on people. You know, the episode I'm thinking of is the one with the computer in the cave.
Oh, yeah, old man in the cave, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we met. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, so I give it 1.5 stars. I give it an extra half star for Richard Bayshard, for the speech, and even for Antoinette Bowers.
No, they were very good actors.
It's really cool that when you're you know, of course you're a woman, of course all your clothes are tattered, but like the men managed to keep their clothes in pretty good shape, but the women are there with like ripped jeans and stuff. And
Elizabeth Montgomery was clothed the whole time except when she took her clothes off to put that dress on. But even then, she was like fully clothed to her neck, you know, in the dress.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of originality, not much there. But I don't know. It's like you said, Lynn, it's not really a bad episode. It's just not very original. And the fact that it, you know, another episode had come before it, not like quite a year.
It's watchable. It's not.
Yeah.
Watch. I mean, you know, I immediately recognized it as a rehash of two, but still I could watch it, and it's not something that if it was on a marathon, you know, I'm going to turn it off because it's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, so I give it 1.5 stars.
Okay. So we've got, what did you give it, Bobby? You gave it a 1, right?
1.
Okay, so we got a 1, and Rick 2.5, and a 1.5, and I give it a 1. Okay, and Felix, you gave it a -1. Okay, so we're from a -1 all the way to 2.5 here. That's okay. But I still think Claude Akins or Charlton Heston or maybe, yeah, you're right about, Rick, you're right about Roddy McDowell. He's got too squeaky of a voice. You need someone with that command.
Yeah.
And Charles Bronson was good with that. Charles Bronson was good in two with that. Yeah, you need somebody like that. Oscar Beresci, and he couldn't do it. No.
Rip Torn.
Yeah. There you go. Rip Torn could have done it. Yeah. Could add some. There were some other actors, but he was good. Okay. Well, unless anybody has anything else to say about it, this is going to be a short episode.
I'm curious what Dave and Robert think.
Yeah, well, they're going to put it, as soon as Robert gets back from his vacation, he says he's going to edit in Dave's review and his review.
Oh, wait, let me add one more thing into the whole improbability of this episode. I read somewhere that when she speaks, she's actually speaking English, but in like a backwards fashion.
Yes, that's what it says at IMDb.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. No kidding. No kidding.
That is improbable. It's like, we'll take what you said and we'll just say it backwards, and that'll be the new language. I mean, yeah.
Oh, now I'm gonna
and then English, of course, would be the dominant language as well. So.
Of course. No, I'm going to have to watch it again now to pick it up on that. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, 2 weeks from now, we have got another one that... It's called The Seventh is Made Up of Phantoms, starring Warren Oates and Greg Morris and a few other people.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next on Twilight Zone, 3 National Guardsmen on a maneuver, traveling across the same ground formerly occupied by George Custer and an outfit called the 7th Cavalry. Time in its infinite complexity meshes, and what evolves is a stunningly different story about soldiers and Indians suspended in limbo between then and now. On Twilight Zone next, the 7th is made up of phantoms.
I really don't know what to say about that one. That's going to be in 2 weeks. And that'll be, let me check the date on that one here, 2 weeks. That'll be July 5th, I believe, the day after the 4th.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, after 4th, our 4th of July show, yes. July 5th. The 7th is made up of phantoms. And, it's not one I'm looking forward to, but anyway, it's one that we will be doing in 2 weeks. So Robert will be back then, and Dave will be back then, and Rick, you will hopefully be here, and Louis, I hope you'll be here. Maybe Ken will be feeling better by then, and he'll be back. So we'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
All right, short show, but good show. Okay, everybody, have a great weekend, everyone, and I will see you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, Rick.
Over.
Bye.
Well, I guess that's it for today's episode. My minutes are up, and I better get ready to reactivate the timer so I can get back home and be back in 2 weeks for the next episode. The 7th is made up of phantoms. So look forward to talking to everybody then. Let's hope I make it back in time. And talk to everybody next time on Talking Twilight Zone. Boy, I hope Dave made it back okay.
There to raise them if you did.